Good morning, Barbados. Welcome to Getting Down to Brass Tacks for Thursday, March the 1st. Imagine, the third month of the year already. Just recently, we were celebrating Christmas. I'm Sanka Price, and I'll be your moderator for today's program, which finishes today at 1 p.m. Our producer and the first voice you'll hear when you call is the youthful Graeme Vaughan, the ponytail-wearing Graeme Vaughan. 4341790 is your number to call to discuss any issue or just to share your thoughts. You can also message us on WhatsApp at 266-4862 and via email at brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. On my mind this morning is the economy and the separate calls this week for a renewal of the social partnership from Central Bank Governor Cleviston Haines and Barbados Workers Union General Secretary Tony Moore. I totally support those calls because only a truly national effort by all of the stakeholders within our society will be able to save our economy. You may recall that the social partnership, which is a tripartite pact between the labor movement, employers, and government, was forged in the 1990s to combat the economic crisis then. And in my view, it has served Barbados well. I said my view because I know that there are other people who would disagree with this. But with our economy in an even worse condition today than back then, clearly the social partnership is needed now more than ever. But there's a problem. The relationship is fractured. The trust between the partners has been eroded. And over the last several years, they have been literally at each other's throats. And I don't really need to recount that here, but I guess in discussing it, we will get some of that coming out. But the main questions are, how do we rebuild that trust? Is it possible, given all that has been said by the main actors in the government, the private sector, and the trade union movement, that trust can be rebuilt? To help us examine this, we have on the line political scientist Dr. Dawn Marshall. Dr. Marshall, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, and I'm hoping that I can continue to hear you clearly because sometimes there's some static.
All right, sir. And on the other line is Dr. George Bell. Good morning, Dr. Bell.
Good morning.
My old teacher. Okay. Gentlemen, the question, the social partnership, is it really, first of all, is it really needed in your opinions? I know Dr. Dawn Marshall wrote a paper on it some time ago. Dr. Marshall, would you like to start first? Do we really need the social partnership?
Yes, we need a social partnership, but it should be. I think we shouldn't have any illusions about the evolving democracy that we are witnessing, where interest group politics are also playing a part, and where there are some members of civil society, some organizations that are part of civil society that are also complaining of not having the same kind of influence and access.
In other words, they want a seat at the table.
Yes, of course. Okay. So, the world hasn't remained stuck between 1993 and now. So you would expect that there would be some schisms and some fallout within the established tripartite arrangement, and that within and across society, there would be a sense in which other groups feel that they should be part and parcel of the process.
Dr. Bell, do you really think that we need the tripartite, the social partnership as well?
I would not approach it with that kind of assertion. In my view, the social partnership came into being in a condition of desperation. I do not agree that it was any ideal, beautiful concept that Barbados created that is associated with what is called the Barbados model. I believe that it was a direct necessity out of the very desperate situation that had developed in the early 90s. Further, that the trade unions had been put on the defensive because of the rise of what is now very much called neoliberal philosophy. There was the rise of free market philosophy. There were question marks about whether the old relations between various partners of society should continue. And it was almost as if you were giving the trade union some space of, I get it, some interference there, right?
Yes.
So just a minute. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, Dr. Bell, before
yeah, okay.
Oh, he wrapped with us. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in that context, the liberal philosophy more or less told the trade union that they should cooperate in order for everybody to survive. And I believe that the social partnership, as it emerged then, was essentially against the interests of the trade union movement, but the trade union movement felt that it had to cooperate if it was going to survive. Otherwise, it would have been under pressure both at the level of loss of membership and also at the legitimizing level of ideology. And therefore, what emerged in Barbados at the time was a specific response to a specific type of crisis that persisted over the next decade or so. And then some question marks started to arise about neoliberalism itself. It did not concretize until 2008, when the very people who advocated that particular outlook created within their operation a crisis, and that is a crisis of finance capital, which became international. And therefore, that collapsed, and the whole free market ideology, which had mystified all the classes, including the working class and their leadership and their trade union leadership, that carried them back to the reality of historical political economy since the Industrial Revolution. And on that basis, the conflict of interest between workers and capital re-emerged. Now, it has not fully re-emerged. The philosophy has not fully diminished to negative. And therefore, you still have persistent views, such as we are hearing here today, on the question of the free market, on the question of the need for a social partnership, and so on. My view is that we are in a phase where there's serious rethinking that has to be done on economy, on government, and everything. And on that basis, the question would then be answered, do we need a social partnership? Because what is going to happen is that we have to re-examine all the relationships and see what is in the best interest of most of the people in society and the various sectors. And that requires discussion, experimentation, and implementation of institutional transformation and the new institutions. You have to go through that. And it's not something that you can do easily. It's not something that can be done overnight. But to persist with an old technique, that's all it was, for survival purposes and even desperate purposes, into a new reality, is to make a fool of yourself, because you are making the category, you are making the concept real when the reality is on the ground. You don't have to ask workers if they're being exploited. You don't have to ask them if they're feeling that they're disadvantaged. You don't have to ask the trade union leadership that now if they feel disadvantaged or if they think that they're being, that if their members are being exploited. It is all around them. They can feel it. So therefore, social partnership, which more or less dullens them in their response to other people who are, in a sense, in a crisis, very often, the big classes, the rich people, they make a killing. But they tell the other people that they're suffering too. But they make a killing because everything is reduced on the basis of empirical force. That you have to go down, you have to sell things cheaply, you have to accept low wages and so on. That is the reality that we are in. And therefore, if you get the thing saying we are all equal and we must all be nice and all that kind of stuff, that was the ideology of neoliberalism, it will hurt the masses of the people.
Dr. Marshall. Thank you, Dr. Bell. Dr. Marshall, would you want to respond to that?
Yes, I think what Dr. Bell did was set the ground really for an understanding of the kind of ideological and ideational forces that impact upon Barbados in its planning on the way forward, and how these forces have become enshrined in policy. Indeed, in many places, many times I've had to say, and other colleagues of mine have had to say over and over again, this notion that the way forward is through an IMF standby arrangement only corresponds to a particular narrow point of view that says the way to fix a problem associated with your public finances is to really make social classes at the bottom feel the squeeze. And for example, I'll give you a concrete example. We're talking about the need for increased productivity. We're talking about the need for public sector reform.
And we're talking about the need to, as it were, merge state-oriented enterprises in order to ensure greater efficiencies. Nobody has stopped to ask, is this really the crisis that we're facing? Or is it that we have a public sector not necessarily fit for purpose? That is to say, why should persons with a holding a degree in economics be renewing Barbados driver's licenses at the licensing authority? Why aren't we having a situation where the skilled persons in the public service be put in particular locales and put in particular, set with particular tasks that would attend to the restructuring of the economy in particular directions that would see the growth of biotechnology in agriculture, the growth of new industries, and so on and so forth. I mean, we have a very skilled labor force, but rather than rejig that labor force, we're talking about culling and cutting back and so on, because it fits a certain kind of paradigm and outlook. So I am not surprised, for example, that all the political parties are lining up, getting ready for a general election, but no one will ever discuss what are their plans forward relative to their arrangements, relative to embracing or not embracing an IMF standby arrangement. They wouldn't do that because the IMF standby arrangement is really a further consolidation of a paradigm that suggests that we should put financial sector enhancement at the top and leave the business of diversifying our economy to some second-order priority. But the reality is that we have a very narrow economy, and you're going to be, regardless of which government is in power, which party is in power, you're going to be fit with crises from time to time, because all we rely on is tourism and the sale of one or two exports. But so I agree with the general thrust that Dr. Bell is putting forward here, that we really need to look at this neoliberal path of development and then recognize that the crisis that the unions are facing is that in the tripartite arrangement, they are asked to, as it were, sign on and behave appropriately, right? The government has to face the people every 5 years. The trade unions have to face the membership periodically. But the private sector interests remain insulated from the politics of tripartism because nobody could command them or force them to make investment choices that would redound to the benefit of the country.
So what is the way forward then?
Well, the way forward, one of the reasons why I would have said at the start that some kind of social partnership arrangement is necessary, even though I'm not in favor of the model that I don't think the model that we've had works now. The reason I say that is that we need many other voices at the table. There are many other groups and bodies that should be at the table adding voice to what ought to be done. Just one example of that is we had a discussion in Parliament last week over a renewed plan. We are hearing that the social partnership agreed with this plan. We are hearing that from the government, that the social partnership agreed with this plan. I know myself and other colleagues have only received the plan in the mail like Friday last week. I am hearing the private sector saying that they have reviewed the plan. I don't know what expertise they were relying on. I'm hearing the unions making mixed noises in relation to this plan. But the reality is that many pockets across civil society, even within the Takane programs, there's not been a discussion on the details of this plan. Yet we are hearing that this plan has been adopted and we're going forward.
Sir, let me just break in here.
So we're talking about more constructive dialogue.
Yeah, but let me just break in here and clarify, because I spoke to Mr. Charles Herbert, the chair of the Barbados Private Sector Association, and he made it quite clear that although he signed on behalf of the private sector, and Ms. Moore, Toni Moore from the BW, although she also made it quite clear in a press statement the following week. Although they both signed on the dotted line, they did so with conditions. And the key thing here that they both pointed out was that discussion was now needed, as far as they're concerned, to make this thing a plan. You have to look at in terms of the implementation. Nothing of that sort has been discussed or worked out. So as far as they're concerned, it is not the salvation plan that the government has been pushing. In fact, Ms. Moore said that government was using the social partnership as a tool of convenience and warned Barbadians to be, and I quote, because I have it right in front of me here, "Be wary of those who have mastered the Machiavellian art of paltering where lies are told by telling the truth." She made that comment in her statement as regards the way in which government was saying that this is the plan and that the stakeholders had signed on to it.
Listen, I have a lot of respect for what they would have said, but I'm holding before me something called the Barbados Sustainable Recovery Plan 2018, mm-hmm. a framework for Barbados National Economic mm-hmm. and Social Development Restructuring and Enhancement Program.
And on page V11, you can get the statement from
both of them, and also on page 5, you see page V,
yes.
you see the statement from Charles Herbert. Now, mm-hmm. I'm saying this plan, like any other attempt to fashion a way forward, where you involve the society and organs of the society, we should have had a wider range discussion. There are a range of alternatives that can be put forward for consideration. And the plan, as I see it here, speaks to certain kinds of priorities for 2018, frameworks for reduction, debt stabilization and reduction, and so on. And, you know, and there are all kinds of, you know, objectives set out here. Mm-hmm. And a new government, at any rate, will have to set out what they think are the priorities going forward. Mm-hmm. But that notwithstanding, we are at a crossroads in the country where our public finances are concerned and where we go forward in relation to our development planning and strategizing. And We've seen with the adoption of this plan, large sections of the population were left out. We also saw that the two other partners besides government would not have consulted widely with their own constituencies and would not have had the benefit of a review by any specialist experts across the gamut of development studies and so on to inform their own decision to sign the dotted line. And basically, what we are talking about really are the elites who sit currently in the social partnership, having exchanging a handshake and now coming back to the different constituencies to say, well, that handshake doesn't mean anything other more than something symbolic. And I don't buy it, really.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Marshall. Dr. Bell, your thoughts on the Barbados Sustainable Recovery Plan?
All right, let me do some clarification there again. It is from my perspective, you know.
Yeah.
The people in the partnership now were just referred to as the elites. But let's recognize what is the nature of our political economy. What they also represent is power. And people always try to shun away from power because most people, in fact, don't understand what is power. But those people that are in that social partnership, but if it's the private sector, they have a power base in terms of what they can do and get away with in relation to other people. The government also has power. It also has authority. The trade unions have power because of the nature of the membership that they have. There's no other sector that is going to be able to be identified that can easily match the power of those three. But what we are saying is that one of the three were put at a disadvantage in relation to what has happened over the last 20 to 30 years. Now, my view is that you can have, as Don is saying, you can have the discussion among various people and greater discussion than has taken place. But whenever you're finished, because we live in a democracy and we also are part of the power relations that exist, those two things are going to bring us back to the kind of forces that we are seeing represented there. The only force that I can see that is excluded is really the force of the opposition within the character of government that we have. That is to say, they have power too. Now, their power now in relation to outside of government and the power of the ruling party is that there are mass democratic parties. Now, a mass democratic party emerges because it wants to harness power, which is to do with a democracy in terms of the widening of the franchise. This is a phenomenon that happened in Europe, particularly in our case, the influence of Britain in the late 19th century when the working class was brought into voting circles. And in order to mobilize and capture that force, which in numbers, the force of numbers, the parties transferred from clubs, which they were for most of the time in centuries before that, what once there was any parliament in Britain, and they transformed into mass democratic parties. Even the Conservative Tory Party then borrowed from the emerging Labour Party and the trade union movement linked together to form what we now know as the British Labour Party, and so on and so forth, without going into all the details of that. So those two mass democratic parties represent power as well. They also represent consultation. They cannot really come up with anything meaningful unless they're talking with a whole set of civil interests, different sectors, different interests, even some of the very people that are represented on the social partnership. And then one of them is going to form the government, and the other one is the loyal opposition in relation to the government, so that they discuss things in parliament. I think what we have to do is to see how we can enhance that in relation to people that feel that they're being neglected in terms of the advancement of their interests. We've got to have a big constitutional review in Barbados. We have to try to see if we can bring that committee system that allows for people to come in and consult with the people that are going to make the decisions in terms of the government. But to talk in a very abstract way about give this body a speak and that body a speak, and that is why democracy coalesces and crystallizes into parties, because all those people need to be represented in a meaningful way in terms of implementation, in terms of real power, and it has manifested itself in what we call the mass democratic party. So that is the way that the thing, in my view, is going to evolve. But we cannot force it. Just say you cannot stop the waves from coming in the sea at the rate that they come. You can ride the waves, but you have to wait on them. So that we have to wait until enough intellectual force, mass force, broad common sense, all those things come together, the biting interests, and tell people, we got to do something about, because we cannot live in the old way anymore. We got to live in a new way.
But Dr. Bell,
and then bring things together, and you have to be patient. So you got to grow. We have to evolve.
But Dr. Bell, with the urgency of our economic situation, what is the way forward? What can we do?
Well, you implement in relation to what I just said. If you see a wave coming, right, and you are a surfer, you go and get a surfboard. Okay, so anybody that becomes the government has to look to see, first of all, if they can swim. Secondly, if they got a surfboard. Thirdly, if they know to surf. And then for the wave, they can't tell the wave when to come. And they can't tell the wave to stop either. But they can prepare for it. And so when the best wave comes out, they have no control over that either. But they can wait for it and have a nice ride in. So all you have to do, in my view, is the next government has to understand what I'm talking about. And that not being arrogant there, they I'm just saying that in a general sense. They have to understand that this is the nature of the phenomenon that they're dealing with. Don't talk about it. It matters. The immediate crisis on us. Yeah, we got to try to get out of the situation where we're going down, 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 down. And you need a government that can have the confidence and the political capital to start to breath back up, up, up. And therefore, that government must go in and start to work immediately to bring us back up. But the question of whether they can solve something, that is going to take time.
With you. Dr. Marshall.
Sure.
Well, it's 10:24. We have just 6 more minutes to go. And I want to again thank both of you for coming on this morning. I'll put the same question to you. The urgency of the situation, what can we do right now? As you
say, I enjoy the metaphors that George utilized just now about waves and knowing how to tackle them, you know,
yes. Uh-huh.
And indeed, asking yourself whether or not you know how to surf. The way those metaphors can work. Look, we currently are in a situation where we should take note of the different options we face. As we speak, there are 96 IMF standby arrangements involving developing countries. Featuring the fund. This is the IMF. Mm-hmm.
Of those 96, we have the examples in the Caribbean to look at. Grenada, St. Kitts, Jamaica. There's been plenty of discussion about those three as reference points that Barbados can look at if it needs to access cheap source of finance to shore up the foreign reserves and to, as it were, ride this wave for another couple of months. Now, the problem with looking at those reference points is that we miss, in the case of St. Kitts, there's never been a large social sector, never been a large role for the, never been a large role being played in terms of corporate and social welfare by the government of St. Kitts. In the case of Jamaica, the IMF's involvement in Jamaica is not just in the recent last 3 years, but it goes back to 1977. And I don't have to speak too much, hopefully, about the levels of poverty, alienation by large swathes of the working majority and so on. Alienation of them. And, of course, in cases of Grenada, after the revolution ended in 1983, the Herbert Blaise government approached the IMF, and the IMF saw to it a diminished role for the state. And even though there is a semblance of a stronger social sector in the state of Grenada over St. Kitts, nothing approaches what Barbados represents. So we really are into uncharted territory here. So a homegrown solution seems to be one that Barbados would have to seriously look at if it wants to avoid cuts in pensions, cuts in support for tertiary education, and cuts in health and so on. But if you're talking about a homegrown solution, then that new government that has to, as it were, battle and see the way forward must, as a matter of necessity, engage in the debt rescheduling negotiations that need to take place with the Central Bank and the NIS. And it has to find cheap sources of foreign capital in order to shore up its foreign reserves. Now, I just spoke about 96 standby arrangements that occur across the world. There are 66 bilateral arrangements between China and a bevy of developing countries, including small island states within Southeast Asia. But rather than we explore what those mean in relation to balance of payment support, support for infrastructure renewal and so on, and what are the downfalls of Chinese aid and investment versus the benefits, how we can use our sovereignty to engage in meaningful negotiations on the way forward. Those discussions haven't begun because they're not on the table. What is on the table is the proposal by the government of the day in relation to its own brand of a homegrown and Delisle World's notion of sending home 4,500 workers and so on, something akin to an IMF standby arrangement without the label. And we can do better than this as a country.
All right, sir. Thank you. Yeah. Dr. Bell, you have the last word.
Well, I think that I've said it. I've said what I want to say. I think that the social partnership is not going to be serving the purpose that it was set up to serve in a desperate situation. I think that its ideological base has been blown, and therefore we are in a situation where we have to look for new techniques, and we need a government that has people have confidence in, and we need a government that has enough political capital to take creative initiatives, and that will allow us to get back to growth. So that is what is going to be ultimately the way to get to the solution, because without that growth, all the things that Don has been talking about there will diminish. So we have to get back to growth so that we can continue to uplift the majority of the population and allow the engine of the society in terms of its economy to prosper.
So let me just play devil's advocate here. Well, should this government, it's often said that there's a lack of confidence in the present regime. But let's assume that this government does regain power. How do you think the situation could be going forward? Do you think that they would have that the confidence of all the stakeholders, given all that has happened, to be able to get the economy moving?
Well, the first thing I would say, Sankar, is any government coming to power, and even if it's this one, comes with a strong mandate. Dr. Bell is right in relation to how we see power in a democracy. A new government comes to power in 2018, brings with it the authority of having won a general election. And in that sense, it comes with a mandate to act and perform. Hopefully that mandate will be clear enough to act and perform in ways to bring about a rescue. So, I of course, you can't do anything about flight of capital or so on, because there will be interests lined up one way or the other, and you may see some shuffling of feet. But it all depends on the extent to which that new government, if it is this current government, can continue to galvanize support around its homegrown program.
All right, so thank you. Dr. Bell, are you still there?
Yes, yes.
Yes, would you mind answering the question?
Well, the problem is, what Dr. Marshall said there is correct in terms of the consequences of an election. An election is a re-legitimizing instrument. It says the people want this government, and that is also equal, therefore, to a certain amount of political capital. It should represent that somebody has confidence. The problem is we are the critical people in relation to confidence, that is people who are investors, whether they actually believe that, because they might not be in agreement with even the majority opinion in the society. They are just thinking about their money and their resources. And if that is not, if you cannot get them around to the point where they have confidence in whatever the people have done, even though that gives the government legitimacy and authority, they will not cooperate. And if they don't cooperate, we will be on a downward slide. We will continue on a downward slide. So that is the problem with even if you get the legitimacy from winning the election. You need a government that people can say, we think that they will bring something different. And we need to have something different because we've been trying something else for a while, and we don't have the confidence in that. So that confidence thing, I think, is going to be critical to any recovery. And it almost transcends the democratic right of the people to put in whatever government they want to. So you have to be able to get legitimacy on the basis of the democratic right of the people, but then you have to be able to get, as I said before, that engine of the society in terms of the economy, the investors, to say whether they're going to believe in that government and say we're going to work with you. Otherwise, they can go anywhere else in the world.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for participating, and I hope you continue listening. We have to take a commercial break, and we will be right back.
Good morning, Mr. Sankar. How are you?
I'm well. And you?
Yeah, I'm a little disturbed. Actually, I feel more like an ant between two elephants, but I'll still say what I have to. And I think more people who are not economists should still lend their voices. So you must forgive me. I'm not an economist, a practicing one. And I do like two economists in this country. One you had on, Mr. Bell, and Mr. Diamond Stevens, who don't seem to have any agendas other than to try to help this country. I can't say that for all the others. But anyhow, be that as it may, what I want to say, you mentioned that we have a crisis on our hands. Is that correct? You said that?
I did say that.
Right. Well, we have two crises. One is a political and one is an economic. If you had the opportunity to look at the letter which appeared on page 10 of the Chooser's Nation, that would identify a political crisis that spills over into the economics also. And those things we have to fix. I've heard so many times people say, now, what is the opposition doing? Why they don't present a plan? Good heavens. The opposition is not to necessarily to present plans for anyone. What they are to do, I would imagine, is to do what they are doing. Look at the plans that are presented and criticize them. Because the other thing about, I'm not saying I'm standing up for opposition or otherwise, I'm just trying to say what I think an opposition should be doing. But at the same time, when it comes to things like the way we run our parliament, and on the 6th of this month, it will be good riddance to the one we have now. Thank God for that. Those are things that need to be addressed. And that's why I believe that there are two crises. Right now, as Dr. Bell said, there is a lack of confidence in this country, and nothing will happen in the next few months if we do not have a general election, regardless of who wins it. The point is, we are a stalemate in limbo, and nothing will happen, and any delay is just going to cause these crises to deepen. So that is something that has to be fixed first. In terms of the economy, we have to stop, find a way that we can stop printing money. If we don't, we are going to dig a deeper hole for ourselves. And the other thing that I would like to mention is this question of outlawing press conferences. Press conferences have the advantage of letting the people who elect the representatives, letting the people know what is happening in the country. And I noticed that press conferences in Barbados seem to be outlawed. We don't know anything. In fact, I was looking at, forgive me for going on like this, I was looking at the front page of Today's Nation, and I see it deals with something about 15,000 policyholders, and there's one lady who says she's happy for the pensions and so on. I think it's Ms. Fowler, and she's very happy until you turn the over to page 3, and then she's not very happy again, because there's this lingering fear that we may go back to where we were. Now, why I raise that, if you are going to present information to people, present as much information as you possibly can. In this particular instance, we don't know who are the people who are running this new company. We don't know how it is funded, hopefully not with taxpayers' money. And we don't know how much money they have to pay out. These things.
All right, sir, I really got to stop you. I'm stopping you because I really need to clarify, because there are a couple of things I wanted to clarify, but I was going to let you talk out. But first of all, the printing of money, that has been reduced significantly. That has reduced from, I think from 2015, the other financial year before, is reduced from close to $700 million to less than $100 million. So that has been, so government has reduced that significantly. Okay? That's the first point. The second point, in terms of rest life, that's what you're talking about, the front page story this morning by Sharon Toppin in The Nation. Those persons who are leading rest life, they were introduced to the public formally about a month ago. When it was announced that they will be making these actual payments this month end, well, it's beginning of March now, and you know that a number of bonds were floated to get that money, but of course everything is backed by the government, in other words, us as taxpayers, okay, because the reality is at the end of the day, the taxpayers will have to pay that.
Jeez.
Okay, so it's a bond issue, and that's it. So I just wanted to clarify those 3 points.
Yeah, I was just reading the newspaper, and that stuck out to my, because they hadn't been following it, for obviously it's been going on for such a long time that I really had not been following it. So I'm glad that at least the public has got some information from you, because I thought when this information came out this morning, that could have been included. Mm-hmm. But be that as it may, I'm glad to know that something is being done for those people, although we don't know to what. You realize that in the calendar, the Roman calendar, I think the March was their first month, right?
I can't.
Yes,
I will be speaking out of correction.
The Ides of March.
The Ides of March.
15th, yes. Rather, 15th, where debts and things like that used to be paid. And it's also the time when the leader,
Julius Caesar,
was assassinated. I think it was 44 BC or something like that. Yes. This is a very significant month. And I'm hoping that we will have...
Maybe Mr. Stewart will make it even more significant by calling the elections.
Yes, that is what the point I'm saying. Why do we have to prolong the agony? Nothing is happening in Barbados. And therefore, I think that would be a great service if it was done. I don't care who takes over. The point is, confidence has to be restored. Mm-hmm. And it's not, if the people then decide, we have confidence in X or Y or Z... well, so be it. Then at least they'll be able to work with that group. Mm-hmm. But as it stands right now, nothing is happening in Barbados, and everybody is apprehensive. Mm-hmm. So I hope that this would be something that we would hear later on this month. And don't forget, that article that appeared on Tuesday.
It's morality. The headline is, "It's Morality Versus Legality."
Yes. And I hope that you have to read it twice to really understand what the writer was trying to say. I have to read it twice myself. Anyhow, thank you, Mr. Sanker.
All right, sir. You have a good day. Brass Tacks, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Mr. Sank Price. Let me bring that first caller that you are on just know that if you're talking about confidence of anybody, let's say, for example, the Democratic Party retained the government. You're saying then that the private sector people is going to lay about for another 5 years before election is called. You can't look at things and such.
He did not say that, sir.
He said that there is no confidence right now in this government. So therefore, if the government is retained, what are the private sector people going to do? Are they going to lay about for the next 5 years?
Is that the point you want to make?
No, the other point, there's a lot more points I want to make. I hear George Ben make a statement and talk. We use a metaphor to talking about the world of waves. It all depends, again, on the size of the wave you're looking at. To ride the wave, certainly, you can't imagine anybody riding a tidal wave. So therefore, that metaphor that he uses is a bit too simplistic. The problem that you have...
But you understood what he meant, right?
I understand what you said.
And one way of communicating with people is making things as simple as possible so that everybody can understand. So when you come with all the highfalutin academia, you lose a lot of people. They may look at you and they may be nodding their heads and smiling, but they don't understand a word you say.
I can agree with that to a certain extent, but then again, you're talking to a right variety of people. Are people who pull down things to pieces, you see? And when you're talking to me, you have to look at things in a logical...
When I'm talking to you, I always have to be on my guard because I know where you come from.
And
you make it quite plain. You carry on.
Yeah. The other thing I want to ask you, do we go forward? How do we go forward? I was listening to an old speech that the... that Miss Mia or Mom Marty made some time ago when she was addressing the Iowa General Conference. And she said that the Barbados Labour Party got in the power that they're going to pay for the students' fees at UWI. I have no problem with that. But, you know...
How come you don't have a problem with that? I've heard you on more than one occasion question how she can pay for it. So that's why I said you have to be careful with you, because today you will say one thing and then come and contradict yourself another day.
But I'm not finished. You did not wait till you finish. I have no problem.
Come, we're getting right now. Come. Right. Let me see you.
The problem that I have, Psycho Price, is if you are foolhardy, then you believe foolhardy things. So therefore, if you want to captivate the imagination of the voters, you can say anything.
All right, sir. And let me tell you something. In government, governments determine their priorities. Right now in Barbados, you have a situation where you have only a few trucks to collect the garbage.
Uh-huh.
All right? Yeah. You were actually paying people a lot of money. This is the private sector now, to collect garbage. But you couldn't find the money to buy the trucks. And you know what? If you go up to Vaucluse, you'll find a 5-story building costing $28 or $30 million going up. This government prioritized that building, okay? Mm. Yet they needed trucks, and a truck. You know how much trucks you could have bought for $28 million?
But do you not hear the explanation with that? Was that if you have money, if you get money to do one thing, you can't take and do something different with it?
But you know the same thing that you're saying. And the same thing that I am saying, depending on who is saying it, okay, they twist it to suit them. All I'm saying to you, sir, is that when you come with that argument, I can take you back to the 1960s. I've read the debates when Mr. Barrow was talking about free education. The question was being asked, but how are you going to pay for it? Every time an innovative idea comes, or any sort of idea comes, whoever is on the propose insight always asks, how are you going to pay for it? Look at what is happening. You as a government prioritize and you decide what you want. Move on. Let's go. Next point.
Yes. The next point is, if you look at it that way, I could also say the money that you spend on Greenland landfill could have done something much better. Because right now, that was a total waste of money. So we could go on and go on and go on.
You know, it is a real pity. You know what I find is a real, real pity? That my country, supposedly your country too, is having all these problems. But people like you continually come on the air and dredge up things from near 20 years ago. I said, look, the reality is this, sir. Whether you like it or anybody else who's hearing my voice likes it, we have a problem today. When money is spent yesterday and it gone, you can say, hey, these people make a mess of this. They make a mess of that. They make a mess. You can say that with every single government that we have had since independence. But it is about time that people like you stop coming here with all this foolish propaganda and start dealing with the issue of what is happening to this country. Okay? Thank you very much. This is Brad Sachs. Good morning. You're on the air. Good morning. In the meantime, just let me read this WhatsApp. Good morning, Sanka. How long are we going to talk about this much-touted homegrown solution? As just spoken by Dr. Marshall. Under this government, we have we not had 5 or 6 of those, all of which have failed and failed miserably. These people have played us for too long. Enough is enough. Then this other, this is long. People, let's keep it short. This one dealing with CLECO. Mr. Price, I just heard about you trying to correct the gentleman on the CLECO issue. I am a policyholder for about 15 years. And I surrendered my policy. But to your point as to the funding of these payouts, because a bond issue was placed in the market by the government does not mean the money was raised. The confidence in government do not give much people to buy bonds at this time. Even the maturity date is a couple of years ahead.